Pickaxe.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hey, all. I'm Dr. Alok Kanoja, but the internet knows me as Dr. K. I spent 7 years studying to become a monk and then became a psychiatrist. I want to tell you a little bit about my podcast, Healthy Gamer GG, where we combine my clinical experience of practicing psychiatry and sprinkle in years of experience as a meditation teacher and sort of focus on spirituality. So on the podcast, we're going to approach very common everyday problems from each of these lenses. And what we really do well is blend science and spirituality to create the most accessible solutions for people for their everyday problems. So check us out at Healthy Gamer GG on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple.
Wasn't that nice?
70s synth vibe to that one.
16-bit, Sega Genesis, dystopic future.
Dystopic.
Future Cop LAPD.
Thank you.
Welcome to Hatchet episode 94 with your hosts, Chris Trott,
Ross Hornby,
and Alex Smith. And man, Future Cop LAPD was such a good game.
I recently got it again.
It's the thing that transforms from a walker into like a little car, right? And then you like wander through that.
It's ahead of its time.
It is. That and it was just really fun to play. There was the other one where you're in like a spaceship flying around where you're also a cop. Oh, God. Same era. It was like PlayStation 1. And there
PlayStation 1, yeah. G-Police, is it that?
Spaceship Police Future PS1. Come on, Google. Come on, Google. Not Future Cop. Oh, there we go.
Future Cop LAPD.
It was G-Police.
It holds up, by the way.
It was G-Police.
Does it really? I've never played it before. So this is from what, 1998? What console was it on?
PlayStation 1.
PS1. Okay.
Right.
And I've played it before.
1998.
Google G-Police. This game was the absolute shit. So it was...
Okay, G-Police is the one.
It's a PlayStation game that you flew around in kind of like attack helicopter... and you had all these different weapons. It was so good. It was a bit like The Descent, if you remember that game as well, but like in a city.
Yeah.
It was just basically like being on a killing spree in GTA, but in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Such a good game.
I've brought it up now. It looks, yeah. It looks, yeah, it looks old.
It was super ahead of its time.
Right.
It does look ahead of its time. Look at this. I mean, this is upscaled and stuff, but we're looking at it if you're listening to the podcast.
It's
very much PlayStation 1.
From 1997. Yeah. Long time ago. That was
amazing.
When Princess Di left us. Just some context.
Oh, wow.
Some time context for you.
Mm.
And also the same year my Scalextrix was broken.
Oh. Is that how you remember when Princess Di?
That's exactly how I remember it.
That's
I got that for my birthday.
There.
And then at her funeral it broke. I say at her funeral. I didn't
what were you
take
more torn up
a
about?
A set of Scalextrix to her funeral.
Wait, hold on. Princess Diana's
being on,
funeral.
Yeah, so it was on TV at the time. And then my brothers were fucking around with my Scalextrix and it broke. And I don't know. It's one of those, they were so delicate, weren't they? Like, as setups. It's just like, and
they
if the
were.
Car broke, then it was like an expensive replacement. It's just like, oh.
Yeah
very
brush.
Disappointing. And scarring. So if you perhaps have kids, maybe take that on board. And if they're. You know, toys are broken. It will traumatize them until they're in their 30s.
Especially if there's like another tragic event happening at the same time.
Yeah, but that was just, if anything, a milestone that, allowed me to remember it, I suppose. Yeah, like this.
Well, it didn't allow you to remember it. It forced you to remember it.
It put that in my day.
Like you'll never forget it because of that.
So if a major disaster happens or if a,
so
if
thanks,
there's
Princess
a celebrity
Di.
Funeral, guys.
Thanks, Princess Di.
Try to limit the damage. At home. All right.
Yeah. I'm still traumatized by my sister losing my first edition Harry Potter book. Welcome to
I've got a first edition Harry Potter book.
You've got a first edition Harry Potter podcast.
Yeah, I've got a first edition Order of the Phoenix, I believe, wow, which is hardback.
Right.
I doubt it's worth... I don't know how much those are
worth. Is it in good condition?
I think it is in good condition. I'd have to double check. It's at my parents' house, just on a shelf. I didn't really put any equate any value to it, so I have read it.
Well, you don't like pick it up now and again and just give it a little read.
Like a stupid prick, I read the book. Ugh. God, I know. I should have just stuck to the films like everyone else.
Untainted, Ross. I know. Untainted. Whoa. Untouched.
Yeah, I don't know if it's dog-eared. It might
as
be.
As J.K. Like, Rowling intended.
Yeah, I'll save it for the book burnings.
Yeah, please do, because it's not going to be long now until... No. Hopefully everyone flips.
We'll all be book burning our books.
We'll all be book burning.
And then we'll be like, what are we doing with these books? Let's start burning hard drives. It's like, yeah, fucking, yeah, let's throw our hard drives in the mix.
Yeah.
I'll be there running a drill and microwave conveyor belt. I'm just drilling through any kind of electrical goods.
Yeah. Ethernet cables being thrown into the mix. Like, let's destroy the internet. These cables are surging the devil's power.
Yeah, I mean, what if it turns out that Ethernet cables can, like, they leave a shadow of the data that they channel? So we've got to destroy them because special technology can extract the data that's actually flown through them.
It's biblical. Mm. That is really biblical. The way you've just, the way to formulate a biblical idea into a digital story.
Yeah.
The shadows of demons past.
There is this big fear, isn't there, that once quantum computing takes hold, all traditional encryption will become incredibly hard to actually maintain.
So it will all need to become quantum. It'll just be redone very quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, is that a case of, is there a gradient to that, or is it kind of like an immediate switch over? Because surely you would imagine...
Like, you have a quantum computer, right, that can just immediately do the hard, like, brute force... every possible password on everything, essentially. And if that just gets in the wrong hands, every possible encryption based on old zeros and ones is obsolete and can be hacked. So,
and everything you'd ever want to keep private or safe is no longer that. Thank you very much to, did you say Jordan Falconer for sending in that fingle? Thank you very much.
You wouldn't pronounce
Patreons.
That Falconer.
Who are sponsoring this sort of existential weekly existential crisis. Thank you to them.
We're trying to mitigate that where we can with hilarious hijinks and hypotheticals.
So much hijink,
it doesn't need to be serious.
But it's hard. It leaks in. It leaks in every time. And it's... I mean, we live in this reality, don't we? So,
or do we?
Unless
do
we choose. Oh, God. Let's get into simulation theory real quick.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Everything is projected and we're actually a 2D, or two-dimensional species... an existence that's projected into 3D.
Maybe we're just somebody's comic book.
Oh.
Maybe we're
that's
just,
actually a potential theory, by the way. Maybe I want you to know that.
What, that we're somebody's comic book?
No, that we exist in two dimensions and we're projected into 3D.
Oh.
Right, okay.
I mean, yeah, I guess it could be. I think a lot of this stuff could be real, but if we can't perceive it and can't experience it, it's essentially pointless to know, right?
It's the running... theory, like everyone's like nodding.
Yeah, because would you try to break it?
All the scientists.
If somebody told you that, would you like? How would you communicate with that? The projectors, for
example. Well, it's just again, it's one of those theories that are like the math lines up, everything works in the current model of physics and science. There's nothing that can disprove that the theory that we are on a 2D disc essentially and being projected in 3D. So that's the current running theory that it's yet to be disproven.
Okay.
Isn't that insane?
That is just bloody nuts.
I can't really imagine it. So like,
no, it's unfathomable because it's not within our realms of reality to understand it, of course. So hold on, let me see if I can Google some knowledge about it.
How
whilst Smith reads
Google.
Out our first hypothetical of the week. It's more philosophical this week I went for. The okay. options, so our patrons have chosen.
Well, yeah, these are all pretty deep. So the first one is thank you, Patreons, people who sponsor this podcast. They get to vote on these before they go live. Thank you for these selections. What should be the goal of humanity is the first question. Easy one.
To survive?
Yeah, probably. It's a good
question. Is the basic instinctual level of living creatures?
This is what should be the goal.
So what should be the goal?
What do we think should
not
be the goal?
What is?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess surviving as a species is we should be trying to make that work, and obviously that's still something that
but
we're
to
working
what
on.
End?
You know, I mean, well, I guess obviously right now we're exhausting a lot of resources to the point where we're polluting our environment
to
a dangerous
just to survive
level
as we are, yeah.
And obviously, as populations increase, that's only going to become more of a pressure cooker. So we need to find another planet to live on. And I say Mars is really fucking cool. So let's go to Mars. You know, I'm not would I live on Mars? I could barely live in a kind of semi-hot country. So
I was going to say, Mars, that's the problem, right? No environment we will ever find will ever be better than this one.
Like, of course,
in terms of the flora and fauna of our planet is designed for us. Unless you designed a whole planet yourself, which is possible eventually.
Yeah. Unless we all become, you know, pod people.
Well,
we live inside pods where we just have a virtual reality headset on. Mm-hmm. And that pod is stored somewhere deep underground and given a very basic level of nutrients. And we just live our lives in our brains. And then our bodies become a tiny little battery. And that's how I think things will go. That's 2023.
Okay. That's so Ross has made his predictions for next year. Quarter one, quarter two. What are we thinking?
I'd say quarter two.
There's
going to be a few hiccups on the way. But I mean, I guess the real question is, would you climb or be pushed into the pod? Would you jump in or just wait until you're pushed? Because I think
it would have to be like a really bad situation in the real world for me to willingly go into a pod like that. Okay, it would have to be literally like life or death.
All the nukes went off. You've just heard.
I mean, first of all, in order to get people to be up for this kind of thing en masse, there would almost certainly have to be like a trial, right? So you get to go and trial it, and then you get to come back to your body, and you get to make a decision as to whether you die a human, mortal, or you decide to do this connection. And I think
What if once you're in, you don't even know if you're in or out?
Well, exactly.
Because you've just been convinced. So you're now just like in this world, and you're like, well, yeah, you can go now, buddy. And then you think you've gone, but you're still in there.
Every decision is a cost-benefit decision beyond like profound emotions, right? So like there are profound emotional decisions and there are profound logical decisions that we all make. Like things like, you know, choosing to protect a child or a sibling or something like that.
Do you hold in the shit or do you go now?
Exactly. Or when somebody is...
You wait until it's about to fall out.
Exactly. So really this is kind of a practical decision and an emotional decision, and you just need to do like a cost-benefit analysis, don't you, of whether or not... I think that most people would choose to step into this machine because one of the greatest fears of most people is death. And if this promised to change death into some exciting new boundless virtual experience, I think a lot of people would be interested in that. I think that ultimately you would one day miss your body. Is the only experience you could never ever have again is the feeling of actually being in your body. And I think a lot of people would miss that and fantasize about that eventually, because it's like that is in a virtual world you can create any virtual
feeling. But you can't miss
feeling.
What you don't know.
But you
like
do
what if we have
come
a body
from this body? We
but
come
what
from
if
the
we
body.
Have an outer another body and we're in this simulation that's created by the pod? We don't know what it feels like to be that thing.
So
that's
we've never had a body.
So we've never had a body in our head.
Fine.
So what we're experiencing is what we're experiencing. We feel absolutely fine with it. And we've been tricked into going in there. And we said, when they said, well, you can come out whenever you want. And then bam, you've been tricked. It's so convincing. You think you've left. And you're like, I have autonomy. And bam, you're still in that fucking machine because you're a prick and you signed the contract. But the nukes went off.
And it's all Zuckerberg.
So you're underground.
Went off.
So it's fine.
But this is we come back to this quite a lot, and it's something that I very briefly studied when I was about 17. It's the brain in the vat thought experiment, essentially, is what this is, right? Which is René Descartes had something called an evil genius idea, where basically he talked about a similar concept to the brain in the vat, where it's like you're fed all of your stimuli, right? And all of the different things that go, the signals that come in and out of your brain could just be synthesized or created, and you would never know the difference. But essentially, the brain in the vat is like, it's a thought experiment that allows you to look at things like reality, consciousness, like, you know, knowledge, lots of things like that. We could go on. In terms of bringing in the Patreon question of what should be the goal of humanity,
yes,
I think that the survival thing is a very good point. I think that that's ultimately why humanity still exists. But
it's a very macro thing, though, isn't it? It's kind of like, how do we achieve an end?
Yeah. Well, the survival is a means to an end. Like Trot says, to what end? Why would you just survive? Survival, right, simply for, you know, if somebody said, here's, well, if I put you in my little container experiment that I spoke about before, and I just gave you water and food for the rest of your life, and you were just in a box, you could survive, but would you want to?
Right.
But like, what should the goal of humanity be?
Survive and thrive?
Yeah. I mean, you could probably go and quote a bunch of different, like, you know, like proclamations
of
various nations, you know, like liberty and justice for all and shit like that. But I don't actually necessarily think that that's a practical way to manage humanity, liberty and justice for all. I think liberty for everybody is a fantastic ideal. I think that it's quite difficult to give everybody absolute liberty to do everything and still have a functioning society. But anyway, I think the progress 10 really, I mean, it sounds very sort of Silicon Valley and a little bit empty. But like, progress is the, I think, should be the goal of humanity. Like, you know, like knowing oneself, loving each other, all those things, discovering new emotional frontiers are all very great and lovely and an excellent element of being a human being. But ultimately, humanity as a whole needs to continue to progress. We need to, and what does progress look like? I think longer lives. I think, more knowledge for everybody, understanding of both ourselves and the universe that we live in. You know, all these things allow us to progress and become better human beings. Unity is incredibly important. The fact that we aren't over tribalism, that we aren't really even over, if you look at how the English world, the English country works at the moment, it feels like we're not even over feudalism. We're certainly not over an oligarchy of structure, which now exists, you know, in the form of businesses, politicians, all these people still form very much like a Western oligarchy. So we've got a long fucking way to go. But one day you'd hope that country borders would be broken down. We're all human beings. We all have different cultures, different languages, different appearances. But like, we're still humans. We are humanity together. And so if one day all of those things come together and we can bring everybody up to speed again, a massive undertaking to get everybody educated, get everybody access to the same resources, everybody feeling empowered and whole. I mean, it's hundreds of years of work, probably.
Unify us, essentially, is kind of,
because then
a
allow,
huge
but,
goal
but
of humanity.
Only
if we could all be on the same page of progression,
all
we can
in
actually
the name of progress. But I don't actually
do
think
better.
This will happen, by the way.
Well, no,
I think this
course,
is a pipe dream.
Yeah.
I think humanity will destroy itself before I actually think this. Like, you know, I don't think that we can do it. I think that the amount of work needed to avoid a catastrophe that we have the capability to enact now, and we only become even more able to destroy ourselves as things progress as well. This is what's so tricky, is it's like we're speeding everything up. We're making everything more dangerous, more quick, more, yeah, capable.
To offer a slightly more optimistic counterpoint to that, I think we are so fearful of our own death, and survival is so intrinsic that we simply can't allow ourselves to destroy ourselves at the same time. There might be a point where there is like no return, right? Like there's a runaway effect. However, I think the closer we get to the idea that, oh my god, this is real, the harder we're going to work to survive.
So
there is
a point.
We may not have a good existence because of what we've done. However, I think we will potentially endure anyway because we'd rather not die.
Yeah, no, so I think that's a really good point. Human grit and determination to just fucking cling on to to life. Yeah, no, I think that's a nice idea.
Pithy existence that you have, at least you have that, you know?
Yeah.
I think the fear of not knowing what is on the other side is enough to motivate anyone to stay alive and do something about it. So that's my two cents into that topic.
For sure.
I think, yeah, but I mean, that's the biggest struggle, isn't getting everyone to work together to solve problems. And I mean, we've been through various issues recently that we've had an example of what that is like, to try and get nations to work together. And, you know, in some circumstances they thrive, in other circumstances the people, you know, will make their decisions. And
I think people have really struggled with empathy. Like, it doesn't come to everybody until it happens to the individual. Take charity, for example. Like, it's more often than not, you're not going to sign up to a monthly subscription for a charity unless someone injects themselves into your life by stopping you on the street or coming to your door and giving you a speech about why they should do this. And you're only going to really sign up if you feel emotions in that moment, or you have a connection to it. It's like, oh yeah, someone close to me has got the X, Y, and Z, and I feel like it's responsible for me to give back now that I understand it. Like, we need to understand it and empathize with it in order to do anything about things. And I think that's one of the biggest flaws of humanity, is you can't just like take information in and be like, yeah, that makes sense, I want to help now. It's like, nah, I need to wait for that tragedy to occur in my life for me to worry about it.
I was listening to Frankie Boyle talk to Louis Theroux about this. It's like a podcast from like 2020 or something, where they're talking about a little bit about cancel culture, a little bit about other stuff. It's not really that much about cancel culture. I think the BBC actually led with it, like being like,
as if it was.
Frankie Boyle and Louis Theroux talk about cancel culture, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting to hear about. But it's just the BBC being assholes, really, I think, because they just want
clickbaity.
Yeah, exactly. But what was really interesting, and it was something that I've kind of been struggling, or not struggling with, but thinking about myself as well, was obviously me in particular, I make quite a lot of off-color jokes and like stuff like that. Like, for example, the Rwanda thing, right? So we're talking about sending immigrants to, or refugees to Rwanda.
It's not something us individually, that's going on. Just FYI.
The only illegals, is it?
No, so just not us individually, as in...
the government, the UK government.
To send people away to Rwanda. The UK government have decided that the people who have struggled and strived to get to this country are then going to be immediately shipped off to Rwanda as some sort of solution.
We are responsible for this because we voted for this government, or rather I didn't, but you know, the voting body of England did. So that's why I use we, because people need to accept that they're also responsible for this if they voted for this government. But essentially they are sending refugees to Rwanda. And yesterday when we were in the warehouse, I was talking about it and I was like, man, the only thing I can think of, kind of jokingly, kind of, you know, like in that tone where it's like I'm trying to make an inflammatory remark about Rwanda, is the genocide that happened there in the 90s. Now, I looked into Rwanda last night because I was just kind of interested. I was like, what's Rwanda like? What would a refugee or an immigrant see if they arrived there? And it's a really beautiful country, it turns out. It's like a goddamn paradise in a lot of ways, which a lot of African countries are, by the way. They're beautiful, like garden countries. Very troubled in a lot of ways. Like, you can't disparage the prime minister and stuff like that still. There's not, you know, it's a little bit less free, I'd say, than some.
You do have to remember that it's also kind of like Americans don't like all of America being clubbed together and painted with the same brush. Africa is even more diverse than that.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So saying Africa, yeah.
But so, anyway, so going back to, and I was like, man, yeah, like, is it okay to make jokes like that? And then I started listening to this podcast of the day, and Frankie Boyle was talking about it, and he's like, what you've got to remember is, and it is what you were saying, Trot, really, is that, like, people will laugh at jokes based on whether or not they have experienced the trauma that joke is joking about. And I don't want to say the classic term make light of, you know, because that's always makes it sound as though it's like, oh, you're just making light of illness, or you're making light of this. And it's like, well, yeah. And I mean, you need to hear Frankie Boyle explain this, because I'm not going to be able to do it as eloquently, but like, he's like, these are jokes. These aren't statements. I'm not going out there and attacking and laughing in the face of a person that has this, you know. I am saying things to elicit like a response from the audience, and that response is going to be colored based on that individual's experiences. And so some people who will take issue with certain jokes will likely have had experiences that have led them down that path. It doesn't mean that Frankie Boyle necessarily wants to target that individual and make them feel bad about those experiences, right? And anyway, what you're saying is like this empathy thing. You're talking about like, I think it is a lot, and it's something that I've spoken to people on the opposite side of arguments that I've had about, like, why can't you just, you know, use a person's pronoun when they've requested you to use it, and all, you know, those sort of stuff. And it often comes down to, and I've been explained, is like, my empathy isn't, you know, doesn't extend that far. I don't care. Like, and I think that's kind of almost like a fair thing to say, an honest thing to say, because my empathy for certain situations, just because of what you've described, Trot, about like, I've experienced certain things, and my ability to empathize with people going through those things is increased because of those experiences.
When you say you don't care,
I can make jokes more easily about certain things that I haven't experienced. But then you say that we need to make everybody empathetic, or the need to make people more empathetic. It's a giant fucking task to do, to make everybody empathetic, and the ability of those individuals.
Hello, my friend. My name's Sean, and I want to end your suffering. No, not like that. With meditation in my new podcast, Mindfulness for Gamers. Each episode, I'll take you through how mindfulness can help you to feel less anxious and frustrated and put you on the path of happiness, all through the lovely, grimy lens of video games. So make time to level up your mental health and take the first step on your spiritual skill tree. Join me and subscribe to Mindfulness for Gamers right here, right now.
To be empathetic, even if we did something like that, is in a way controlled by what they've been through already.
And also, it's like a case of the time that you catch them as well. Like, you can have the most empathetic person in the world, but if they've literally just witnessed a car crash or something, or said something tragic happened to them, just as you're about to say, like, could you spare, like, some empathy for me? I'm not in a frame of mind right now to help you.
Now. Yeah, exactly.
If you'd caught me yesterday, I would have absolutely no problem. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's also a timing thing as well. Like, humans change on an hourly, minute basis.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
It's a huge task.
There's a time and a place. Like, you wouldn't say that joke in front of someone who suffered from the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's more of a case of, like, say,
a comedian,
like,
doesn't know who's in their audience.
Yeah. Like I say, I think Frankie Boyle explained it a lot better than I did, and I don't really want to, like, sort of put myself into a position where I can't, you know, give a person a good reason for what I'm saying. So, but like, I do, it is interesting. Like, you know, empathy is very much a watchword at the moment of the world, or at least in the Western world, where we're all trying to work out how much to care about things ultimately, because there is so much to care about and so much information to take in that you're like, fuck, how much of this do I worry about? How much of this do I need to change?
Well, yeah, like, because I mean, obviously, there's various, obviously, issues going on in the world, but like, when people say, oh, you know, oh, so you're concerned about, you know, the war in Ukraine, but what about all the other wars? And it's like, well, it's not really, I mean, I do care about all of those other wars as well, but like, this is something that's either closer to you or something, or there's a bigger fear
that's
in,
like,
terms of the bigger,
like,
impact
the
of things.
Black Lives Matter argument, where it's like, well, all lives matter.
Yeah,
but
where it's like, well,
yeah, right,
you're aware that,
of
course, but like, that's what you're targeting at, and like, that's
what
I'm empathizing
say,
with at the moment. I empathize with all those situations, but like, yeah, when something's so raw, that tends to be where people's attention goes, and then someone turns around and goes, oh, well, you suddenly didn't care about this war in this place, but, well, you must be this, this, and that. It's like, well, not necessarily. I mean,
I'm unable to be omniscient and take in all situations at once. I think it's quite clear that humans are incapable of taking on too much based on social media alone. Like, having too many opinions. Like, we physically can't take on that. So, one war at a time is one thing I can process, ultimately. And it sucks that there are multiple going on. But this is the one in my focal point right now, because it's the one discussed the most around me. So it's not necessarily on me to remind myself every time, okay, what other wars are going on right now that I have to equally share my emotional load with? I can't do that.
Or there's whataboutism and stuff is just so, like,
frustrating,
because it's like, well, you can care about multiple things at the same time. Like,
Did you see that
specific. What's that?
The Good Morning Britain clip where you had the two presenters and a climate activist.
Yeah, oh my God. There's Good
and
Morning Britain is
it was
awful,
directly,
man. It's terrible.
I know, it's awful. However, it's it's the fact that it's real is one thing. And it was I saw a clip where it was put next to the film Don't Look Up.
Yeah,
so they were literally in the same situation. And so you got the climate activist that's like, we are on the precipice of, you know, disaster and stuff, and we need to do everything we can. And then the guy's like, but what about your clothing? Because essentially the clothing you're wearing comes from oil.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's not what I'm trying to talk about right now. That's literally not the statement I'm making. It's like, is whataboutism of like putting the onus on like, but you do blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you it's can't like, complain about society, but you have to live in a society, right?
Also, I mean, this could go on for hours and none of us are probably gonna like the thing is we got to look at is that there's an agenda above that as well, right? And I could go on about this for hours.
It's trying to downplay it.
What you need to do is you need to educate everybody enough so that they can see where big powerful people are creating agendas. And I'm not talking about QAnon, I'm not talking about stupid shit like that. I'm talking about how like PR and propaganda and newspapers can use traditional methodology to influence people and the way they see things and the way they think. You know, it's like the other day I was watching the news and some idiot from our current government was on there and he had both the UK flag, the Union Jack, and Ukrainian flag right behind him, crammed into this tiny webcam shot.
Yeah.
You've got these two flags behind him. You've got these two flags. He's got both a Ukrainian and UK pin next to him like this. And, you know, and like this guy is not like, you know, an envoy or an ambassador to Ukraine. He's not any of the reasons why you'd traditionally show solidarity with these two countries. He's clearly doing it to appeal to this, you know, emotional need of a lot of people in the UK to feel solidarity with people that they empathize with, right? So essentially they're seeing Ukrainians, like you say, or seeing the terrible things that are being piped into our news and all of our social feeds and, you know, the shit, the horrible shit that's going on in Ukraine. And this person is essentially just putting all these fucking flags up behind him and wearing all these pins in order to influence those people that are feeling genuine emotional empathy, you know, genuine good feelings and thoughts towards wanting to stop a war. He's using that in order to get them on their side. And that's all that is. It's not because that person necessarily feels a strong link with, you know, Ukraine or whatever. It's because they want to use it as a method to influence and control people. And you need to see that at a top level. Same with Good Morning Britain. You know, all of these places have, even Channel 4. I mean, you know, I love Channel 4, but it's an incredibly left, liberal format right now. And you know, when you see the Labour Party using Partygate, when you see the Labour Party using a lot of terrible shit that the fucking Conservatives have done, they are still using those as tools to try and influence the voter base to see it, because they have to use the same kind of tools, because there's sort of different echelons of tools, right, based on who you are, what your values are, what your aspirations are. There are different sets of tools, and as long as you understand that every single argument or every single action is crafted in a way to try and influence your behavior, then you can then go out into the world and make the best possible decisions you possibly can. But then this all stems from education, access to equal opportunities, access to wealth, access to healthcare, all of these fucking things. You know, like 70% of people who died in America or something like that, it were of minorities, of ethnic minorities, or were black in the US. And that wasn't because COVID or something is necessarily affecting them. It's because a lot of these people were poorer, and so they had lots of pre-existing conditions that they weren't able to treat because they couldn't afford to do it. And therefore, when something like a pandemic comes along, they're in a worse place to survive it. If you don't have access to the best food, time off work, medical care, you know, all of these things come as a result of poverty and inequality. They don't come as a result of your genetics. And you know, so it's just such a fucking giant, giant, huge picture. I don't know. This is why I think we're in a huge uphill battle.
Let me propose a solution.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
2023 rolls around, the apocalypse has happened, like Ross has predicted, and we're going to have to get into those pods. Everyone, it becomes Equilibrium, the movie with Christian Bale.
So everyone turns their emotions
People
off.
Are learning gun catter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone's turned off their emotions, and ultimately everyone wears the same thing, and just In fact, we just don't have faces anymore. Yeah. That'd be easy, wouldn't it? We just didn't have faces, so there's no differences. So people can't just be all tribalistic about, like, well, I don't know about that. It's a bit different, so I'm going to fear it and maybe attack it. But if there's none of that, that's like the perfect utopia, right?
Yeah. Well, if it, yeah, I mean, yeah. But then, like, that's the thing. Like, I've been listening to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, which is really, really great podcast. Really long, though. They're like 4.5 hour episodes, and they are dense. But I'm watching, listening to one about Japan in the lead up to World War II, and how, like, the perspective of Japan and how their, like, ideology and their mindset came about. Really, really interesting. And like, how the Allies viewed the Germans as these, like, logical, ruthless robots. And then they view the Japanese as almost these, like, fanatical, unstoppable robots. And how, yeah, a lot of the time, like, all of these regimes and ideas and great new ideas of societies come along. And, yeah, often, Trot, they suggest, like, you know, taking emotion out of it. Or in one of them is sort of taking emotion out of it, and the other is harnessing emotion and purifying emotion, right? To, like, try and create, like, sentiment or direction for a society, like, you know, like, this love of country is all, you know, that kind of thing is another thing. But just to finish this section, the Frankie Boyle joke, which is just brilliant, and I love him. He's one of my favorite comedians. I know he's extremely controversial, but he is a bloody genius. And he brought up the fact that Great Britain is the fourth biggest seller of arms going to the Saudis, that they then used to bomb the shit out of Yemen, which is something that's been going on for years and years and years now. And it's often, like you said earlier about the whataboutism, often brought up when the Ukraine conflict is mentioned, and saying, like, well, the Yemen war has been going on for years. And I think the harsh reality is that they're not white, they're not Christian, they're not near Europe, is the main reason that people don't care about that but do care about Ukraine. There are many, many reasons for that.
Othering.
Yeah, there are many, many reasons for that, you know, legitimate and unlegitimate, like, or illegitimate. But anyway, he said that we're the fourth biggest supplier of arms to the war in Ukraine and the second biggest supplier of aid to Ukraine, right? This is true. So we sell bombs to people to bomb Ukraine, and then the UK then sends aid to Yemen, who is being bombed by the weapons that we're selling. And Frankie Boyle said, well, it's obvious, you know, when life gives you Yemen, you give Yemen aid. But it is insane.
Fucking hell.
It is insane. That is the world we live in. The world is fucking crazy. There's no rules. We don't live in an advanced society. We live in an oligarchy. What's the next Patreon question?
It says, does a person's name influence the person they become?
No.
Was Frankie Boyle a
weird name?
I guess, yeah, unless they're royalty, or, like, I guess wealth, if you're a wealthy figure and the name means something.
Yeah, I reckon it does. Because if you name yourself Alex Smith, for example, or you've been called Alex Smith, you've come from a line of people that probably had that as a profession, or it stems from, at least in the UK, I can't say that for every country, but it's part of, like, who, what the family did and your status in society. So I still think
how would that affect
effects.
What you become, though? Like,
sometimes there's old money in it, and therefore you grow up in a situation because of your name and your heritage of being, you know, slightly wealthier and therefore put into private school or slightly better education. And I think your name can change that.
Then why didn't I get involved with toy trains?
I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You should have.
I should have got involved with those toy trains.
Chat's brought up a good point. Look at Colin Hanks and Chet Hanks.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great point. You know, give a guy an old, unassuming, reliable name like Colin, you get Colin Hanks. Give a guy the name Chet, which to me does sound like a bit of a bra. I don't know. That's obviously my conditioning and my experiences of all people I've ever met called Chet colouring this.
Did you watch the documentary about that?
Boy, that guy is off the rocker.
He's a bit unhinged.
Affects people in different ways.
But yeah, like, because he was saying that he didn't live a lavish life growing up and stuff, which obviously is hard to know whether that's true. But Colin obviously has had a Hollywood career so far, and I don't know what Chat's been
Colin seems
to.
Like fully groomed in Hollywood, right? He seems like the perfect Tom Hanks son.
Yeah.
Brought into the world
but your brother.
Embody.
But your brother recently?
That's a quote.
That's literally
anyway.
About that, yeah.
Chet is clearly a guy that the black sheep of the family that wanted to like be anti-Hollywood and not be a part of it. I can admire his brazen attitude and like the things he does say, although really like stupid sometimes and really outspoken and needs to be filtered or like said in a way where you can get his point of view across better. He's not exactly. He's just a guy that's struggling with the situation.
And I mean, also, you wonder whether there was a rebellious stage that kind of like. Because it seems like he obviously, I don't know, has different.
He's
friends,
got the confidence of an actor.
Groups, and then also.
And the money.
Yeah.
Almost resents his father's fame. I don't know. There's an element there from the interviews he's done that he doesn't necessarily enjoy that his dad is like this person who overshadows everything he does. So maybe that's
you both have siblings as well, right? You know how you're different from those siblings. I think like we as siblings we tend to have vaguely similar experiences in our formative years. You know, if we've lived in the same household or we've lived in with the same structures, we have vaguely similar experiences. But beyond that, you know, your physiology is different. You're going to have different experiences in life, in your private time or your school time or whatever. So like, yeah, you can, I think you can look at your siblings and see how you can be different. You can be different people. No, I don't think a name influences a person, really. It's the answer to that picture.
Well, all I'm saying is if you go to school or you go around your local village and you're a trot and you get spat on, that does encourage.
That still happens.
Like how you're going to act as a person. It's like, oh, there's a fucking trot over there.
We all the kids come and spit on the trot. The whole school of kids are walking through the village. God, I got him good. Got him
Don't
in the face.
Hang around them trots. They're fucked up. They're fucked up.
They're a fucked lot.
And did you not talk about families as a whole? Like, don't speak to them, or like, oh, you better watch out for those that group of family.
Yeah, they're mainly travellers though.
But
I'm
even then,
lie.
Like the name, I wouldn't carry that name over to like if someone else I met with that same like surname, I wouldn't carry that idea of them. If an individual acted in a certain way, I wouldn't use that name. That wouldn't carry with me normally.
There's a bit of prejudice though.
Oh,
you might remember that. You might remember that. Yeah, you might. Oh,
I mean,
Smiths. I know what they're like.
There's this question: does this person? I mean, that is very true. To be honest, the influence that a person's name, and this is why I said right at the start when you asked the first question, I was like, depends if you've got a weird name. It kind of, as in, plays into what you're saying, Trot, is that a person's name can influence who they become, I suppose, but it comes from the outside, right? It comes from people persecuting you, perhaps based on that name. And
doesn't all of your personality
come from that? Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think that a person, you can't give a name to a person and go, this is going to influence them, but it can influence them. I think it can have an effect, yes, but it doesn't
tell that to the
define
Dalai Lama.
Them. It doesn't define them. tell that to the Dalai Lama. Whose name wasn't Dalai Lama when he was born, Trot.
What about the fucking Pope? He chose his name too.
His name's not Pope, right?
No.
Is it not?
No,
it is.
I mean, they choose their like ordained
name.
They
choose their name and then they inherit that title. It influences who they are. Mm. All I'm saying is their names do influence.
No, fair enough. Fair enough, yes, that's good. I
in
like
certain
that.
Capacities.
Yeah.
It's down to the individual.
Yep.
Also, like if you have a really good surname that's like nicknameable.
Yep.
That influences who
that
you are.
Useful.
Like, there's a person that I knew called Nathan Boone.
Yeah.
He became Booner, and everyone called him Booner. And I feel like he embodied what a Booner is, which is like, all right, mate, I'm a fucking Booner.
It just makes me think
and he got,
of curry.
I think he lent into that name more.
You want a chicken Booner?
I would like a chicken tikka Booner.
It wasn't spelled like that.
It rhymes well in particular.
It wasn't spelled B-H-U-N-A, believe it or not.
But like, I'm hearing
yokel
it like
lad
that,
from
and I'm thinking of... Chicken tikka Boona.
Well, it turns out Boona's ancestors actually came from India. Who knew?
Right.
And that's why he has the last name Chicken Boona.
Chicken Boona. It's his surname.
Specifically,
my surname's
dish.
Chicken Boona. Sorry.
Long
Chicken
story.
Boona.
I got 800 years of heritage that I can trace back to the wonderful India. But.
Well.
I mean, the last Patreon question, maybe we can do for next time or something, because it's another huge one. Where does your self-worth come from? Well, to be honest,
my name, my surname.
Both of these questions, both the name one and the self-worth one, I think can actually probably be wrapped into one in the
yourself. They're quite connected, yeah.
Yeah, your self-worth largely comes from your experiences and those around you, right? Unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's often not self-discovered anymore, and this is something that people say Instagram is bad for example. We've rewired our circuits to think more of what other people think of us than what we think of ourselves.
To put value on other people's opinions and therefore
over your own as well, which is insane. Right,
like, yeah, and you pigeonhole yourself in school because you want to be accepted as a person, you want to fall into a group because you want friends and stuff. You kind of shape your personality around the people around you a little bit to fit in, or you actively reject it because you want that to be your personality. It's like, I want to be the misfit, the outcast, because I don't fit in anywhere because I've got other issues are coming out in this way.
And so it's because we all secretly seek to belong. Well, not secretly even. We all desperately want to belong to something. Everybody does. It's a human trait. It's why we succeeded, because we're social. We work together. So even in pariahism.
Generally speaking, yeah.
Generally speaking, yeah. I think it's one of the core tenets of human psyche.
Unless, of course, there are like mental health issues and stuff that like change the way our brain processes work and don't fit the norm, then... Yeah,
that's divergence from the norm.
Extenuating, yeah.
But then, what is the norm? Let's dig into what we feel. What creates norm?
It's the mean.
What's normal
it's the
to
mean
you?
Average, right?
It's the majority is
you
it.
You take everything, divide it by itself.
I think that's a pretty good attempt. You know, there was again, I'm not going to go into this. It's Ross Sewell's. Is it Adam Curtis, the documentary maker?
Yeah.
I usually come up with the wrong name, but there's a documentary which is incredibly hard to follow again because it's too long and energy information.
They are
dense.
Long. They're long documentaries.
He was talking about some scientists, I think, in the early 20th century who were trying to make nature into an electrical circuit. So they took everything in nature, everything that happened, the rain, the animals, the way plants grew, and they tried to turn all of it into logical circuitry to try and work out a way to understand the world through logical
simulate
means. Yeah, and to do all sorts. I mean, it was completely absurd, and Indian nature's far too complicated to do that too, obviously. I feel but this was a time when that kind of thing was coming along, and I don't know, it's just so much to watch and learn and read out there. It's terrifying to try and become a informed individual, and we wish you all the best. Hopefully the Hat Chat podcast is helping you become informed. Probably not, though.
Yeah, we're not known to be that informative.
Have we
more
made you
speculative
today?
Guesswork?
Yeah,
more speculative guesswork. I think it's speculative guesswork.
Speculative guesswork. Yeah. Maybe we should rename ourselves speculative guesswork.
Indeed,
I love
we
it.
Just
guesswork's
say things.
A good shout, but good name for a podcast.
I guess that's the reality of most people. You just sit around with their mates. What do they talk about? Like, no one's an expert in those.
This is like
forums.
Classic pub talk, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, just
set the
having
world
some
to
beers, and you set the world to right, and we're going to fix all our problems. All we need to do as a humanity,
Boris Johnson's just like one of us.
You're going the dark.
Deep down, I saw him with a pint in his hand, which means he's just like me.
Everyone needs.
It's as simple as I need
party.
To go, and I don't need to look further into it. That's it.
Yeah. He may have spent 9 fucking minutes in a room with his birthday cake, but what about all the Christmas parties as well? They're using, right?
Back to the empathy thing again, and fucking responsibility and rules and, authoritative figures, and it's just bollocks, and we have to live through it.
There's a simple rule I can follow, and it is the following. Does this act that I am enraged about or annoyed at or fearful of hurting anybody? Does it hurt you or hurt anyone around them? If no, then it shouldn't bother me. Like, that's basically it. Like, it comes down to pronouns, for example. Does that pronoun, the person identifying themselves as that individual, does that hurt me or anyone? Is that their choice? Yeah. Doesn't hurt me. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
And I'm all fine with whatever they would like me to call them. It doesn't bother me.
Well, sure,
So, and if it does, maybe reflect on why.
Yep.
And like, is there a serious, good, logical reason as to why? If not, then it's not your problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
That's why.
And that can be applied to a lot of things. Yeah. A lot of things where people who aren't even involved in those circles want to dictate over how people live their lives, which is, you see a lot of that in the US lately with LGBT rules and abortion rules and stuff like that, where it's just like, this doesn't even affect people who are like making these rules. And it's just like,
such a reaction.
They talk shit about freedom all the fucking time, and yet they're so restrictive. And it's just watching that stuff is so frustrating.
Toilets aren't safe and like all that. It's bullshit.
Not about, and it's like, it's you're not control. For freedom. You're making restrictions over your belief system. And it's all, and there's, it all out boils down to religion as well. It's just like, oh, I can't stand watching that stuff. And
assumptive fear.
But when rulemakers break the rules, that is really fucking annoying. And it's so hard to like just bottle it in. And you want to just spout off and say bollocks, but you know it won't mean anything or do anything. So yeah.
Vote is your only answer.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. And you just got to hope that people see that. And the most frustrating thing is just the man on the street when they do this stupid, pointless interviews of people in the middle of the day. They're just sat on a fucking park bench like, oh yeah, Boris is all right. Yeah, he's one of the people. It's like, you have no fucking idea. You haven't even looked into it. You just look at a very basic image of something, apply it to yourself in a relative term, and then that's it. That's enough. But that your vote made a decision that fucked someone else in a big way. And it's dumb. And it's annoying.
It's annoying.
It just frustrates me, yeah. Billionaires making tax decisions for millions of people, and they're sitting in their billionaire like towers, just like, well, we didn't pay much tax because, well, we've got the money to find ways around it. And it's like, go fuck yourself.
They can't rule forever, Ross. They can't rule forever. Don't worry.
They
get the anti-aging stuff before everyone else.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, then they'll get murdered by a mass of rebellion. The guillotine's coming
we'll find
back
a way.
Out. We're going to have to borrow the guillotine from France whilst they're too busy being a right-wing nation.
They're trying to bring that back as well. Have you seen that?
The guillotine. Well, she does, doesn't she?
She wants
the pen.
It back,
I think you should execute people, the old classic. No, I don't believe in the death penalty. It's completely fucking pointless. Right, we've got to go. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. Lots of love. Stay alive. Stay alive. Stay happy as you can.
Enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Enjoy the lovely things that is being alive for the brief blink of an eye that humanity has existed.
Mm.
Yeah. Someday you'll turn around and be 34.
Mm.
Goodbye, everybody.